This broadcast is being brought to you by Covenant Medical Center at 6109 Crenshaw Boulevard in Los Angeles, where they specialize in cardiology, diabetes, hypertension, and pain management. Dr. Donald Ware is your specialist, whose practice is focused on patient care, rehabilitation, and life quality. They can be reached at 323-750-5000 or 323-565-2778. Remember, Covenant Medical Center for excellence in patient care.
Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Election day here in the United States, and we are poised to have a historical election no matter what happens. We can either have the first female president or the first non-politician to be voted into office in quite some time. We have a special guest with us today. This is Cleo Washington. He's a former senator from Indiana. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Kenny. I'm glad to be here today, and it's an exciting day for America, so I'm doing pretty good.
I think we have, it was good to have you, and I think we are faced with one of the most challenging situations we've ever had, at least in my lifetime. You know, normally over the years I've said, you know, a lot of times we're voting for the lesser of two evils with regard to voting for the president, but we've never had anything like this, and it'd be interesting to hear your take, actually from the inside, as a former politician or as a politician, what's your take on what we're looking at?
Well, several things, Kenny. I think first, a lot will depend on how many people vote and what percentage of turnout demographic-wise you have. I think that will be critical to who wins and how much they win by. Of course, I believe Secretary Clinton will win if there is a normal demographic turnout. In other words, if the voter turnout is anywhere near what it was the last two presidential elections. In 2008, it was a 62% turnout of registered voters, and in 2012 it dropped to 57%. If it's anywhere in that area, I believe Clinton will win. If there is a super high turnout, for example, 63-64%, then I believe it will be a landslide by Clinton. There are very few scenarios in which I think Trump can win. However, I remind a lot of my friends, and I was talking to some folks from an Indianapolis radio station I'll be talking to later. I remind them of Brexit. I happened to be in London on June 23rd, and some of your viewers may recall prior to the vote on Friday, June 24th, Great Britain would leave the United Kingdom, all the polls showed that about 54% of voters believed that they would stay. But instead, all those voters did not come out, and the voters that wanted Britain to exit the Union, they came out, and there you go, we had Brexit, and it was a shock to the whole world. So it can be a shock to most, I think, political analysts today, if indeed there is a lot of complacency and the folks that would vote for Clinton if they came out, if they stay home, and that's across the country, and that's probably the biggest unknown is what percentage of voters will come out.
I have I'm sorry. I have a question for you. What do you think about the early voting returns? How much do you think that'll play into it? My question is based on the fact that here in North Carolina, my home state, they set a record. 3 million have participated in early voting, and that shattered the last record. So how are we figuring that into it, the early voting?
Yeah, no, and that's a very good point to bring out. The early voting states that I think will have the biggest play is in North Carolina and Florida, without a doubt. And as you mentioned, in North Carolina, the numbers are like 3 million, and in Florida, the number is closer to 6 million. Now, it depends upon, you have to do a demographic breakdown of those numbers. For example, in North Carolina, and I don't know I'm 100% accurate in North Carolina, I know, for example, the percent of turnout in 2012 was probably at least 10% higher of African-American voters in North Carolina than it has been in 2016. Now, fortunately for Clinton, that will be offset by a much larger percentage of Latino turnout. And if the Latino turnout is equal in early voting to what it will be today, then even though most folks believe that Trump will win North Carolina, I believe North Carolina will go in favor of Clinton. But again, that early vote turnout, the voter turnout operation, and I think this is one of the factors that may determine who wins, the voter turnout operation that the Democrats have, I think, is a lot stronger than the ground game of the Republicans. And if that's the case, that may account for 1 to 2% of the vote. I think it's a very important factor. If you look at Florida, and I don't want to say more importantly, because the big difference in Florida and North Carolina had a huge increase, but Florida had literally a 100% increase in the early vote of Latino voters than they did in 2012. Now, you think about that, you say, how is that possible? Well, they go from 260,000 to 520,000. I'm more familiar with Florida because I worked on GOTV in Florida this weekend. That's why I'm just more familiar with the Florida numbers. The interesting thing is I talked to five Latino voters this weekend in Florida. This is anecdotal, of course. Three of the five were from Puerto Rico. And then it hit me, what was the impact of the recession that not only hit the U.S., but hit Puerto Rico also. A lot of Puerto Ricans, I think it's 500,000-600,000, in the last 4 years have moved from Puerto Rico to the mainland, and primarily in Florida, right? And so that's where Clinton got a big boost by the fact of how Trump started his campaign, which was criticizing Mexicans. And you all remember all of his volatile statements and the accusations, the imputations he made about them. And I think that's helped tremendously, and that has helped tremendously drive the early voter turnout. I think, on the other hand, the African-American early vote turnout is kind of unrealistic to expect that it would be as high as it was in 2008 and in 2012, because of the pure excitement of this is history. For the first time, you have an African-American candidate that's getting ready to get elected. And that was different, and I don't know, you know, your ages, but I remember in 84 working on the Jesse Jackson campaign, and right, in 88, but mainly in 84 working on out of D.C. And we kind of had a feeling, wow, this is great. But in the back of most of our minds, we knew that this was a beginning, and although Jesse had a chance, it was totally different than your analysis by 2008, because by 2008, everybody that was over 30 knew they could reflect back to 1984, and they said, this can be real if we get out and vote. And that's why, without a doubt, you know, the history will show, but for the African-American vote in 2008, when it mattered, which was the primary, you know, it would have probably been a different result in the primary, because after 30 million votes, remember, it was a huge turnout, historic turnout of African-American voters. So the early vote is big.
Now, you mentioned, you talk about a lot of Puerto Ricans moving to the mainland, and are you speaking specifically of Cuba, and are you expecting that? I know that a lot of a lot of Cubans vote Republican.
Right, and no, I was speaking specifically to Puerto Rico. I was overlooking at land in Puerto Rico in August of 2015, and I'll never forget this. There were literally, and anyone, any of your viewers or listeners who are watching will know, if they visit Puerto Rico in the last 3 years, 4 years, they have condos everywhere for sale, particularly in San Juan. And as you go around and you look and say, why are these prices so inexpensive? Because, again, the impact of the recession in Puerto Rico caused a lot of flight to Florida. Now, as opposed to, I agree with you 100%, the history of Cuban voters, especially in South Florida, have been to support the Republican Party.
Right.
But I think that is changing also, I think, with Obama's efforts to open up ties with Cuba. I still think the older Cuban voters, again, that's a demographic within the demographic,
yep, exactly.
They are still largely, and I forget the poll numbers, I saw maybe 52-48 pro-Republican, and that's what, you know, Trump is betting on. But I think that will be offset by the pure, and again, I don't have, I can't pull it up now, but the pure number of Puerto Ricans that, you know, the pure number of Latinos, I'm sorry, that lived in Puerto Rico and that have since have moved to Florida in the last 4 years, if somebody could pull it up, I bet it's 500,000. If not 500,000, it has to be 300,000 or 400,000. And when you visit Puerto Rico, when you visit particularly San Juan, you can see it. And then that's where it hit me this weekend that 3 out of the 5 that were out canvassing at the same time, and, you know, you haven't be canvassing, knocking on doors and shaking hands, and you mentioned, where are you originally from? You know, I mentioned Indiana, I'm living in Alabama, and I said, oh, and then I asked them the same question. They say, Puerto Rico, San Juan. And then that's when it hit me that's the hidden vote that a lot of these polls are not probably taking into account, right? Because half of those folks, maybe 75%, that are moving over, they don't have a landline. They're operating strictly on wireless devices, and I bet they haven't been polled. And that's why if you see Florida numbers come in tonight and it's not nearly as close as the polls show, that's the reason, because of Latino voters who are from Puerto Rico. And, you know, you recall back, you know, this is different than 2000. The Gore-Bush polls showed, you know, very even going into, I think Bush had a 3 or 4 point lead, maybe, but the voter turnout of Gore.
Okay, Google.
And the Democrats, the difference here is, even though it's dead even, it's the combination of the voter turnout operation and the pure demographic shift in Florida. And again, to the earlier question, in North Carolina also, and I forget the exact percentage in North Carolina, but it's significantly higher in both North Carolina and in Nevada, a significantly higher percentage of Hispanic voters. And I would not be surprised, because of what Mr. Trump has said, if Secretary Clinton wins 65-70% of that vote.
I found the information you requested, the number of people leaving Puerto Rico for the U.S. mainland, according to a 2014 report, is at historic levels, with about 240 people a day leaving Puerto Rico coming here to the United States, and economics was the driving factor.
Yep. Wow. And so, and again, if those folks come out today, you know, a lot of folks on television have everyone half scared, and again, you should be half scared because we got Brexit to look at. But again, Latino voters are more motivated, I think, this time than African Americans were in 2008 and in 2012. Because what Trump presidency could look like for them, and the, you know, all the efforts he talked about, you know, the whole build the wall and the deportation efforts.
And a lot of the Brexit folks had buyer's remorse after they voted for Brexit. They figured out what was going on and said, oh my, what have I done? But I wanted to go back to something you had mentioned earlier. You talked about the ground game, and Hillary has a much better ground game than Trump does. But there's also the flip side of that is there's an enthusiasm gap. Trump has been able to marshal the resources, if you will, and the people are excited about this. Now, if you look at who those people are, a lot of them are the people that Hillary calls the deplorables, you know, a lot of the alt-right people, the KKK, etc. Whereas Hillary is not in a dynamic speaker. It's hard for her to bring people into the fray because of she's a wonk. She's very policy-oriented, and she's just not that exciting. So there is that enthusiasm gap, and I'm wondering how you think that's going to affect things.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, that's a concern, okay? It is a concern. But I think that will be offset by the overall demographics. But first, let me discuss, you know, why do we have this enthusiasm gap? I think what Trump has been excellent at is selling a narrative that isn't true. And that's the narrative that you have lost your jobs because of, and then you can point to the groups, to the demographic groups. He hasn't said because of African Americans, he said because of the growth of immigration, right? Of Hispanics, because of all these Muslim immigrants coming from Syria and from different parts of Europe and Asia. Right, and then you have a particular demographic. The reality is America is changing dramatically, and if you put it in the perspective of where we were just very briefly in 1956, if you think about it, America had 150 million people, right? 60 years later, we have over 300 million, 320 million, right? The difference is, in 1956, when Eisenhower got elected president, he got 40% of the African-American vote as a Republican, right? Now, what changed, we know dramatically after that, well, one, he got 40% of the vote, and again, I may be a little older than you all, so this is kind of clear to me, because 2 years prior was Brown versus Board of Education, right, that began to open up opportunities for integration in education, right? The 1954 Brown decision, and that was decided by Earl Warren, who was appointed in 52 by who? Eisenhower, a Republican, appointed Warren, a Republican, as Chief Justice, and then Brown, 2 years later, was 9-0. And African Americans responded to that because then there was not a real difference between the policies that were supported by Republicans or Democrats in regards to African American. Then that's what made the change. It was right after that, of course, 8 years later you had, well, 4 years later you had Kennedy, then 8 years later you had the Civil Rights Act in 1964. And then that was the real pivotal change in what has happened, right? Because at that point it was clear that Democrats supported policies to provide for equal opportunity for African Americans. Now, so let me go back to, and we know the history of that, 64, then the 65 Voting Rights Act, and then 1978, the decision out in California, Bakke, right, that began opening doors of opportunity for education. But now, So now, to come back to your question, the enthusiasm gap Trump has been able to create is to appeal to, we will go back to the good old days. And we're not going back to the good old days, because the demographics will not allow you to go back to those, you know, those that believe those are the good old days. Very few of us who were born after 1960, you don't believe those were the good old days, because we realize, although you don't, we don't like to discuss it on a daily basis, and perhaps we shouldn't, except to the extent that you need to know your history, but we realize how things were then in regards to opportunity compared to today, right? And it's totally different. And so Trump's appeal to that, to those folks that want to go back, I think creates greater enthusiasm, along with what has happened with jobs and trade, right, with NAFTA and with global technology, and something you can't change, right? You no one can go back, and no one, very few would say, let's go back to June 2007 and, you know, tell Steve Jobs not to introduce the iPhone. No one would say that, right? No one would go back to whatever it was, I think 1990, when I got my first cell phone that was a bag phone. No one would go back and say, well, no, we want the days where we all had to pull over on the side of the road and find the phone booth, right? No one. Right. So when we think about those things, but the appeal specifically is what hits your pocketbook, and that fear, right, the fear of what if they continue to grow. Well, they will continue to grow. The only population that has maintained the same is African Americans, right? You look back to 56, you can look back to 1902. African Americans' percent of the American electorate has remained the same. We're 12, or the census, I think we're 13%. 13% of the nation is African American. That has remained the same the last 60 years, and it may remain the same the next 60 years. But the growth has been in the Latino population, right? And if you, right. And just let me say this one stat, for example. And again, feel free to interrupt me, because I've been talking about these things a lot. And so, you know, if you want to stop me at any point, stop
but
and
you
interrupt.
Don't fight,
but
you don't
this,
fight.
This, I think, one thing that's really significant. In the year of 2000, right, just 16 years ago, Bush-Gore election, 78%, and this is if you and think about this, 78% of eligible voters were white in the year 2000. 16 years later, well, then 2004 presidential election, it was 75%, right? Mm-hmm. Bush Kerry. Then in 2008, it was 73%. 2012, 71%. And this year, in 2016, the portion of eligible voters who are white is 30%, which means the portion of non-white eligible voters is 30%. And that's almost exclusively a growth of the Latino voters, a small percentage of Asian also, but no growth in the percent of African-American voters. So in other words, it wasn't a growth in the African-American voters in 2008 and 2012 that got Obama elected. It was the, what you just asked this question about, right? Which is the enthusiasm gap.
Right.
McCain had, and you're exactly right, McCain had an enthusiasm gap in 2008. Romney had the enthusiasm gap in 2012. They were enthusiastic, but not nearly as excited or enthusiastic as African-American voters, and it was that intensified voter turnout in 08 and in 12 that allowed the president to win despite the, you know, relatively high turnout of the non-African-American voters. So that's huge. And but my point is, even if there is an enthusiasm gap, which there will be with Trump voters, I think that will be offset this time not by African-American intensity, but by the Latino intensify voter turnout operations, particularly in North Carolina, particularly in Florida, and you're even going to see it. I think one of you said you're in Texas. You're going to see it in Texas.
Yeah, I'm in Texas. Mm-hmm.
Texas won't be won this year, but Texas, if Clinton wins today, Texas, I believe, and I guess he may make this prediction 4 years later, Texas will have a legitimate chance of going Democrat.
Right.
Or not in 2020. I know a lot of people listening may say that's not true, but it will.
And I watch the politics closely here, and for years they've been talking about Texas turning purple. We've had it in the, I'm originally from California, and in the past 20 years there's been a tremendous influx of people from both coasts. Texas is historically a very conservative state, and there's still a lot of conservative culture here, but it is changing. It's changing a lot quicker than people expected. You know, for them to talk about Texas turning purple this time and eventually blue, I think the forecast before was out, you know, another 10 or so years. But it's happening a lot quicker than, because just the number of people moving here, a lot of those are the Latino people coming from other places. But one of the other things I wanted to mention, you mentioned the Asian folks. In the last election, it was very surprising. What surprised me was that Obama got 73% of the Asian vote. Now, Asians are generally very conservative people, and you expect them to vote more Republican. But with 73% of the Asian vote, that was very striking. And with Trump,
that's a demographic that will increase, not at the same level as the Latino demographic, but that will continue to increase. It's natural, right? So the only so long as African Americans stay the same. And this goes to the power of coalitions. If you look at the commonality of interests, right, of a disproportionate number of African Americans, a disproportionate number of Latino voters, and a disproportionate number of Asian voters, if someone comes up with a public policy platform where those commonality of interests begin coming together more, then it's going to be very difficult for any Republican to win the presidency for the rest of our lives unless they decide to change their views on certain public policy issues, primarily, and I don't know if you want to get into this yet, but primarily issues that will ultimately be resolved by the Supreme Court of the United States. And I forget his name, the head of the
Reince Priebus.
Yeah. The head of the Republican Party after the 2012 Romney loss, they did, I think they called it an autopsy.
An autopsy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it talked about the need to reach out to more Latino voters.
So much
be
for that.
Friendlier, have friendlier policies.
Yeah.
And you can have, and I don't necessarily want to tell anyone how to do that, but you can have friendlier policies that appeal to Latinos, as evidenced by what? The 2000 election, George Bush. Most of you may recall, he got about 40, maybe 43. It was some high percent
of the
Latino vote.
Yep.
And had, to be honest, had Jeb Bush won, I think it would be a totally different analysis today, because I think he could have made, and maybe even Marco Rubio, he could have certainly, Jeb, made some of the same appeals, right? Again, common interest, economic
right.
opportunity, common interest. Keep the doors of education open, particularly mm-hmm. for low-income people, right? And that's where you cross over into a demographic analysis with a millennial, you know, taking into account what issues are most important for millennials. And all of it really goes back to the fundamentals of the American dream, right? If you have an education, if you have an opportunity to get a good education, you have an opportunity to get a good job, then you can fulfill a lot of whatever you feel is the American dream. And so long as Democrats focus on that more than anything else, I think they'll have a shot at continuing to maintain the presidency. Now, a lot of this is the interesting thing. A lot of people don't realize this, and I tell friends this all the time, particularly over the last 2 years when people have panicked. what has happened in America over the last 60 years? if you think about it, America has been split. So in that sense, this has been one of the nastiest elections ever, because you never had a candidate called a nasty woman, right? You never had a candidate say that I'm going to build a permanent wall. So outside of those things, it's the same, right? And when you do the, and if you think about it, you do the breakdown since last 60 years, 15 presidential elections, 15 Republicans, right? Eisenhower in 56, Nixon in 68, Nixon in 72, Reagan in 80, Reagan in 84, George Herbert Walker in 88, George W. in 2000, and George W. in 2004, right? And then you had Kennedy in 60, Johnson in 64, you had Carter, then you had Clinton, and Obama. So you've had 8 Republicans elected and 7 Democrats in the last 60 years. And when you look at that, that is amazing. You can look at it and your view is it half full or half empty? You can look at it and say, wow, it's incredible division within the U.S. That's the half empty perspective. My perspective is no, it's a half full. It's the beauty of democracy.
We change every either 4 or 8 years.
Exactly.
You know, there's not been, the only time we've had, hey, listen, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to continue this conversation. This is Change Matters. I'm Kenny Hendricks, and we are talking with Cleo Washington, former senator from Indiana, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Change Matters Solutions on Black Talk Radio, hosted by Kenny Hendricks and Colette Williams.
Kenny Hendricks. We are speaking with Cleo Washington here on Election Day 2016.
Kenny,
everyone is getting, yes.
Kenny, let's give the listeners the new number, as we had some callers report they were being charged 1 cent a minute, so we set up a new number. You can still get in the conference line with no charge by calling us at 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030, and then enter the regular code we use, which is 549-032-POUND. Good morning to those who are on the line. Anytime you like to ask a question, hit *6 and 1. Thank you, Kenny.
Okay, thank you. As I said, it's election day, and I hope everybody's going to get out there and vote if you haven't voted already. I voted. We had early voting here in Texas on October 24th, and I was one of the first people in line. It is critical that we get out and vote. If you don't vote, you can't complain. Okay? So please get out there and vote. If you're having any problems, tell somebody. Do not be intimidated. There are a lot of people on the right who are talking about going out there, standing around with guns and yelling at people, trying to intimidate people from voting. Do not be intimidated.
I think I witnessed that, Kenny. When I went to early vote Saturday, on Saturday, I went to early vote. I live in a little rural area in North Carolina. It's about 85% or more white. It does have, it's a lot of black people that live here too, but again, it's a predominantly white county, predominantly red county, a Confederate county, I would even go far as to say. But I went to early vote Saturday. I was like number 13 in line. I went early. So the line started getting pretty long, and it started snaking around the building to the point where I could look out the window of where I was standing and see the back of the line. So I see this Hispanic family. It was a man and a woman, and looked like they had non-voting age children with them. And as they were walking to get in the back of the line, I'm looking at this white male go up to them. Now, I'm inside, they're outside, so I have no idea what he said to them. But whatever he said to them, they turned around and left.
Wow.
Well, yeah, the National NAACP and the Urban League, they have voter suppression hotline set up. I don't have the numbers available for people to call in situations like that, and that's just shameful that anything like that is happening.
Let me bring something up, and we can get into that. I wanted to talk about it, but I do want to get into that voter suppression and voter intimidation. And Scotty, I've mentioned this over the past months. My real thought, my real belief, is that Trump doesn't really want to become president. I don't believe he wants to do the work. He's done nothing to bone up on the policies. He just likes being in front of the crowd. I think he has a fetish for being in front of the crowd and all the adulation that comes with that. He has said so many things that would tank any other candidate's run. He has said them. I believe he's been looking for an exit ramp, but what he's done, I think he's stoked a fire that even he can't put out. And I'm on the Huffington Post website right now, and apparently he was on Fox and Friends this morning, and he said, if I don't win, I will consider it a waste of time, energy, and money. And that goes to show you that he's not serious about this. He's not serious about it. He said about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, that if he didn't win, he would just go back to his good life and have a nice long vacation. Those aren't the words of a man who wants this job. And I seriously don't believe he wants it. I think it was a ruse. I think it was a way to try to get, I think it was NBC he was on for The Apprentice, to give him more money, and that fell through. And he's just been going with it. He's just been going. Nobody would say the things he says and actually think they could get away with it and continue to run. So I just wanted to bring that up. Any thoughts on that, Senator?
No, other than one thing is for sure. If he is unsuccessful, his ability to market himself will continue, whether it's with NBC and a new show or Trump Network,
mm-hmm.
or create something else to compete with Fox, since he's in a part-time love affair with Fox and a part-time hate with Megyn Kelly.
Right.
But yeah, so no, it's what my other feelings on that. They're not constructive, so I won't comment.
Okay. But back to the voter suppression, voter intimidation issue. That's interesting that you saw that, Scotty, and that's pretty disheartening to hear that. You know, and I hope people are aware that nobody can stop you from exercising your right to vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure what we can do from this side to make sure that people aren't intimidated. I know there's supposed to be poll watchers from both sides. But right now, people on the right, particularly white people on the right, feel that their country is being taken away.
Right.
You know, it started with the Tea Party. And the Sarah Palins of the world, you know, and we want our country back. We want to go back to, you know, and it's just exactly what Trump is talking about when he talks about make America great again, which you touched on that, Senator, when you said going back to the good old days, you know, when everything was leave it to Beaver. You know, it may have been leave it to Beaver for, you know, white people at that time, but for blacks and other minorities, it was not. There were very hard times. It wasn't always hard times. Some people had, you know, it was okay, but there were very hard times, and none of us want to go back to that.
Yeah, let me address this briefly, kind of the intimidation suppression issue, kind of from a Justice Department perspective. The Justice Department, of course, oversees if there are complaints made on voter suppression, voter intimidation. Obviously, you have any potential or eligible voter can use the civil system and file lawsuits, and there have been several filed. But the Justice Department overall kind of monitors the federal election. And this year, I believe they have 500 monitors that they sent out. The number has been reduced significantly from the past two elections because of the Supreme Court decision in the Shelby County case, which reduced some of the impact of the Voting Rights Act. And I bring that up to say this. This is the, from my perspective, and any lawyers that are listening that may differ, they can call in, the most important decision that affects the Supreme Court, again, since the Eisenhower election. And the reason is there are currently only eight justices on the court.
Right.
And Scalia, of course, when he died, President Obama nominated Merrick Garland, and he has not even been given a hearing all these months later, because the Republicans controlling the U.S. Senate will not even consider him because he was nominated by a Democratic president. There's a lot of different reasons they list. The bottom line is, under the Constitution, he should be considered and voted down if they decide to vote him down, because the Senate has a role in the process. So the courts that ultimately end up before the Supreme Court, issues on suppression, issues on intimidation, issues on affirmative action, on abortion, on Obamacare, on immigration, on one person, one vote, all those issues are decided ultimately by the Supreme Court. As so long as it's 8-8, it's basically a tie court now, right? And so
right.
The next president, the most important reason for people to get out and vote, if they don't want to vote for Hillary because it's going to be historic, if they don't want to vote for Hillary because almost any other reason, I would ask people to consider the Supreme Court. And what type of Supreme Court do you want for the next 50 years? The court that Eisenhower, by appointing Chief Justice Earl Warren, and remember the Brown versus Board of Education decision,
right,
on May 17, 1954, all lawyers kind of remember that date from studying it to realize that overturned Plessy versus Ferguson for 58 years earlier. So even though slavery had ended 30 years earlier in 1896, you still had a case on the Supreme Court that said you could still openly discriminate. Separate but equal was cool for 58 years until the Supreme Court said in Brown, separate but equal is inherently unequal, right? And then that began leading the change that opened up the doors of opportunity. Right, and I think people ought to consider that, because the Supreme Court is at a point now, if Trump wins and appoints the type of justices that he has promised to, then for sure affirmative action will be gone in the next 3 years.
They will reinstate those
major decisions on women's health issues will be decided. Obamacare will for sure be overturned.
And by the way, McCain and two other lawmakers already said they would block anybody, if Hillary wins, they would block anybody that she nominates.
And so that may be the most important reason for your listeners to come out and vote today. And the reality is this: not only Scalia, there are three justices that are 78 years of age or older. Justice Breyer, Stephen Breyer, Justice Kennedy,
Ginsburg,
and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Right.
All of them are 78, 78, 80,
she's
and 83.
I believe Ginsburg is 83.
Yeah, exactly. Ginsburg is, because she was born back in 1933. And so the reality is, they may not be around the next 8 years, or they may not want to be around on the court. And of course, Ginsburg was appointed by a Democrat, Clinton, and Breyer was appointed by Clinton also. So obviously, if Hillary wins, I'm sure that'll be part of the calculation. I'm not sure. I assume part of the calculation of those that are on the court is who will replace them.
Right.
And again, a Clinton victory will likely mean that, that the next three, maybe four justices will be appointed by a Democrat. The reality of a Trump victory is the next three, maybe four justices will be appointed by a Republican. And of course, you know, Clarence Thomas is still relatively young. He's 68. Justice Roberts is 61. And Justice Alito is 66. So three hardcore conservatives are all, they may be around on court another 20 years. So you have to offset that.
And I think, particularly
the affirmative action issue, because all affirmative action fundamentally means, all it fundamentally means is equal opportunity under the Equal Protection Clause. And when you go back to the Bakke decision out in California, University of California versus Bakke, 1978, that's all it said was that you can use race as a factor, not the only factor, race as a factor when considering admissions to college. In other words, that you can consider diversity as important. And of course, what we've all learned since Bakke in 78, what we've all learned since then is in almost every other area you consider diversity as important. In government, in local government, state government, in federal government, on the courts, in the private sector, in everything, diversity is considered important. But if you have those controlling the nine members on the Supreme Court, if you have five that are controlling votes and they believe diversity is not important, then obviously they're in a situation where they will overturn affirmative action. And I think that's, if there's the single biggest risk to African Americans is that. And some people would disagree and say, oh, no, I disagree because everyone's had an opportunity today. No, there's a cycle of poverty today. There's also a cycle of wealth, right? I have very, very little risk that my sons won't be successful. Why? Because I have a law degree. My wife has a PhD. If they're not, now they don't deserve any break whatsoever. If they can't get in the, Indiana University, California State, Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, wherever they want to go, it's because of what they failed to do. They have full opportunity. They have as much opportunity as any little rich white kid growing up in America or any kid that's been exposed to everything. But those that are still growing up in socioeconomically disadvantaged backgrounds, those are the very ones that need that equal opportunity.
Right. I found a couple of numbers, actually three numbers I want to give out. There's an election protection number, 866-OUR-VOTE. Election protection, again, 866-OUR-VOTE. There's a number here, 866-MY-VOTE-1, 866-MY-VOTE-1. And there's one here, the ACLU Voter Protection Hotline, 877-523-2792. Let me give those out again. Election protection is 866-OUR-VOTE, 866-OUR-VOTE. There's the 866-MY-VOTE-1, 866-MY-VOTE-1, and the Texas ACLU Voter Protection Hotline is 877-523-2792. If you notice something, you know, they're always saying, if you see something, say something. If you notice something, say something, call one of these numbers to report any intimidation, people standing outside that shouldn't be there. People walking up to you saying anything, people standing outside with guns and things like that. Please do not be intimidated. Again, this is Kenny Hendricks. We are Change Matters Solutions, and we're speaking with Cleo Washington, former senator from the state of Indiana. Senator, I wanted to bring something back up that we talked about a few moments back about Donald Trump and how he has gotten the right really excited. And I think one of the things that he's done is he's created an enemy, and that's one of the ways that you get a nation together, is you create an enemy. Hitler did it. You know, he created the Jews as an enemy. And all the time, every time somebody's been able to galvanize people. They've done it at that level. They've done it by creating an enemy. After 9/11, the Muslims became the enemy, and the country became galvanized behind the war and things like that. Now, that was squandered, and that's a whole other issue. But any thoughts with regard to how he's done that? Because what he's been able to do is redirect the anger toward, for example, the immigrants, as opposed to businesses moving overseas. He talks about the Chinese taking our business, but they can't take our business unless our businesses move over there. If people are worried about illegal immigrants being hired, they can't come here and get hired unless the businesses are hiring them. So he's redirecting this anger at the people themselves, as opposed to the people that are actually responsible for it.
I agree, but I don't think that's the biggest problem. But let me first, I do agree, because what he's done, the whole Make America Great Again, right, is great again prior to the influx of Latinos, prior to the influx of Muslims, prior to the influx of Asians. You know, what we're going to do, or what he proposes to do in changing the whole way we're perceived internationally by questioning our relationship with NATO. I think that's right. What you said is, it is effectively, again, creating an enemy and galvanizing support, and again creating that kind of enthusiasm to go out and support him. And when you go out to the Trump rally and you listen to things, just like the, you know, lock her up and build that wall, just stuff that a lot of folks think is crazy, but yet on the other hand, he has a huge amount of support. He's going to get 60 million voters that vote for him today. Now, but I think what it is, Kenny, or Scotty, whoever asked the question, I think a lot of it is simply Republicans coming home, that even if they don't, I think a lot of the vote, rather, will be even if they don't agree with him, and they probably don't on a lot of issues, but you know, he organized the primary to win the primary. He beat a lot of good candidates. Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio would have been very appealing candidates for a lot of moderate and independent voters, and even a fair number of conservative Democratic voters. Hold one second. They're trying to switch. The other line is ringing in on this. Just a second. In any event, so yes, he has done that, but despite all of that, I go back to what has happened the last 60 years, right? And you comment on too, you know, we switch back and forth. So Democrats are Democrats, Republicans are fundamentally Republicans. So if everyone, you know, goes back to their base, then there'll be very few that are truly independent and in the middle, right? And so, you know, again, he's motivated them. But now, despite that, I think without the intervention of FBI Director James Comey, it would be a blowout. I really do. And I think, you know, what the FBI Director did was, you know, very unfortunate, but it impacted a lot of those independent and swing voters. Democrats went home to Hillary in the end. Republicans went home to Trump in the end. And they're roughly equal. And again, that's what we've seen the last several elections. So what will be the deciding factor, if I'm correct and Hillary still wins today, even if she wins by a significant amount, it may be close, but whatever she wins by today, if she wins, it would have been significantly higher but for the intervention of the FBI director, whenever it was, 10 days, 11 days ago, coming out and saying that they were basically reopening the investigation, and he never, that was just incredibly unfair and in violation of Justice Department policies. But that impacted a lot of the folks that had already voted, a lot of the early voters. It really did.
She, you know, she is not without, obviously not without fault, but the Clintons both have had their share of
I agree.
Unseemly behavior, if you will.
I agree.
Over the past few years.
But remember, at the end of the day, it's down to two people.
And we could list.
You know, we could take a few minutes and go over the Clinton faults, and I'm not saying they aren't there. But I'm saying when it comes down to it, I think voters have to vote. What type of America do we really want? Do we want to live in an America where one candidate can say the type of negative things that he said about Latino Americans? And that's the fastest growing, even if they weren't the fastest growing minority group in America. Do we really want that? No, we don't. Now, some people say, well, he really didn't mean it. He said it for, well, you know, they think he meant it. That's why their early vote turnout has been so huge in Nevada, North Carolina, and Florida. And that's the whole thing, is what are our core values as Americans? And we can say that, and a lot of them will define them differently. What I know, though, for sure, is we more than anything else, the principle of democracy, more than anything else, we want everyone to have, and we really believe this, everyone really believes this, a fair opportunity. But how do you give everyone a fair opportunity for whether you call it the American dream, whatever you call it, a fair opportunity to be successful in however you define success? And it all starts, from my perspective, with education, with exposure, with opportunity. And that's where, again, if the Republicans can change that, not only their platform, but how they're talking their policy, I think that's where they can begin to dig into Latino voters like George Bush did.
Yeah, but I think the problem now is that that horse has left the barn. You know, I think when the Tea Party came up after Obama was elected, and the fact that they came out last go around, like you mentioned, Ryan Spree was coming back and said, we're going to do this autopsy. Okay, we have to appeal to more minority voters. We have to appeal to the African-Americans. We have to appeal to Latinos and Asians. And they've done the exact opposite. And what has happened is people on the right have actually gone in the diametrically opposite direction, you know, as opposed to that ilk getting smaller, I think is getting bigger. And people on that side are getting more angry. And, you know, there's this false equivalence. Some people talk about everybody's out there angry. I think people on their left are frustrated. They think they see some things that are not right, and they want them to be corrected. But I think there's a palpable anger on the right that is not equated on the left. And these people are angry. And I don't think there's any turning back. I don't think you're going to get a lot of these people. If you look at their faces at some of these Trump rallies, there's a level of anger there that we haven't seen since the pictures of Selma, okay, and the pictures of people, black people getting kicked around when they were trying to sit at the lunch counters. This is an anger that's not going anywhere anytime soon, and it's permeating through the Republican Party, and I think it's going to hurt them.
Ken, we have to go into final comments.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and let the senator with some final comments. But again, this is Kenny Hendricks, and this is Change Matters. And this is former senator from Indiana, Cleo Washington, with some closing comments. Go ahead, sir.
I would encourage everyone, all your listeners, to get out and vote today. Call everyone they know or email them or text them. The bad news, the black early vote turnout is down. The good news, the Latino early vote turnout is up big time. And so the great news is demographics are often destiny. And to that extent, if a reasonable number of Americans come out and vote today, I think a lot of people will be very proud tomorrow when we celebrate the history in America electing the first woman president. And I think people may not feel it today, but they'll feel kind of the same type of excitement they felt in 2008 when President Obama got elected, and it is a continual progress. President Obama oftentimes talk about incremental progress, and we are making incremental progress. The glass is half full, not half empty, and I think everyone just needs to do everything they can to continue to make America better.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to add one thing to that. You talked about the Supreme Court. I'd like to add how important
that
is.
I'm sorry.
If you don't vote today, you may not be able to vote tomorrow. This is Kenny Hendricks. This is Change Matters. Thank you for joining us. I want to thank Senator Cleo Washington, from the state of Indiana, now living in Alabama. Thank Scotty Reed for producing the show. And everyone, please get out and vote. Thank you very much.